Hello, everyone, and welcome back to another episode of M&A Today. My name is Warren Rose, and I am a senior partner at Grosch, Rose & Moore, LLC. I'll be your host for the next 30 minutes, not only today, but every Friday at noon Eastern. Thanks for tuning in, and feel free to send me your thoughts, ideas, or questions during the broadcast. And if I don't get to them live on the air, I will respond via email after the broadcast. For anyone listening today, we encourage your involvement and feedback, and you can always go back and listen to previous broadcasts that you may have missed or ones that you'd like to hear again. The purpose of this show is to not only educate and inform those of you within the industry, but to give an insight into the advantages of using a professional M&A consulting firm for businesses within the middle market segmentation. Today's broadcast is the first of two parts, and what really created the topic for today's show is the number of emails I receive where there seems to be a certain level of basic misunderstandings. So when I just mentioned why you need a professional M&A consulting firm, today we will drill down on the who, what, when, where, and hows of mergers and acquisitions. This will give professionals within our industry a framework for what your clients need to understand in the course of the M&A process to meet their expectations. It will also give potential buyers, sellers, and those seeking a merger a reference point and a deeper understanding of what all this means and what to expect. I could have titled today's show, Just So We're All on the Same Page, but instead gave it a little more professional title of Understanding the Complex World of M&A. Remember, this is the first of two parts, with the second part concluding on our February 7th broadcast. Okay, here we go. Best place to start is at the beginning. Again, that is so we're all on the same page. Let's start with the very basics of what mergers and acquisitions are. Well, M&A are transactions in which the ownership of companies, other business organizations, or their operating units are transferred or consolidated with other entities. As an aspect of strategic management, M&A can allow enterprises to grow or downsize and change the nature of their business or competitive positioning. From a legal point of view, a merger is a legal consolidation of two entities into one, whereas an acquisition occurs when one entity takes ownership of another entity's stock, equity interests, or assets. From a commercial and economic point of view, both types of transactions generally result in the consolidation of assets and liabilities under one entity, and the distinction between a merger and an acquisition is less clear. A transaction legally structured as an acquisition may have the effect of placing one party's business under the indirect ownership of the other party's shareholders, while a transaction legally structured as a merger may give each party's shareholders partial ownership and control of the combined enterprise. A deal may be euphemistically called a merger of equals if both CEOs agree that joining together is in the best interest of both of their companies. When the deal is unfriendly, that is, when the management of the target company opposes the deal, it may be regarded then as an acquisition. So let's go into exactly what is an acquisition. An acquisition slash takeover is the purchase of one business or company by another company or other business entity. Specific acquisition targets can be identified through a myriad of avenues, including market research, trade expos, sent up from internal business units, or supply chain analysis. Such purchases may be 100% or nearly 100% of the assets or ownership equity of the acquired entity. A consolidation slash amalgamation occurs when two companies combine to form a new enterprise altogether, and neither of the previous companies remains independent. Acquisitions are divided into private and public acquisitions, depending on whether the acquiree or merging company, also termed a target, is or is not listed on a public stock market. Some public companies rely on acquisitions as an important value creation strategy. An additional dimension or categorization consists of whether an acquisition is friendly or hostile. Whether a purchase is perceived as being a friendly one or a hostile one depends significantly on how the proposed acquisition is communicated to and perceived by the target company's board of directors, employees, and shareholders. It is normal for M&A deal communications to take place in a so-called confidentiality bubble or vacuum, wherein the flow of information is restricted pursuant to confidentiality agreements. In the case of a friendly transaction, the companies cooperate in negotiations. In the case of a hostile deal, the board and/or management of the target is unwilling to be bought, or the target's board has no prior knowledge of the offer. Hostile acquisitions can, and often do, ultimately become friendly as the acquirer secures endorsement of the transaction from the board of the acquiree company. This usually requires an improvement in the terms of the offer and or through negotiation. I've actually been on both sides of this equation and have done friendly takeovers and hostile takeovers. It doesn't necessarily mean that a friendly takeover will go smooth or that a hostile takeover doesn't end up smoothing out and the company doing the acquisition becomes the guys in the white hat. That's often because of sometimes when you come in, you're really rocking the boat. I know in particular one hostile takeover that I was a part of. It was because the company that we were taking over had run out of money. They were kind of at the end of the road. And although it came as a surprise to the employees and certain shareholders within the company, we actually turned the company around. They probably would have closed it anyway and possibly been forced into bankruptcy. But we kind of turned everything around, and it took a very short period of time to secure everyone's jobs. We didn't have to really lay off anyone. It ended up being a very good relationship. And we did the right thing for the people within the company, the employees, the shareholders, and even for the clients and suppliers of the company that we acquired. Acquisition usually refers to a purchase of a similar firm that is smaller by a larger one. Sometimes, however, a smaller firm will acquire management control of a larger and or longer established company and retain the name of the latter for the post-acquisition combined entity. This is known as a reverse takeover. Another type of acquisition is the reverse merger, a form of transaction that enables a private company to be publicly listed in a short period of time. A reverse merger occurs when a privately held company, often one that has a strong prospect and is eager to raise financing, buys a publicly listed shell company, usually one with no business and limited assets. The combined evidence suggests that the shareholders of the acquired firms realize significant positive abnormal returns, while shareholders of the acquiring company are most likely to experience a negative wealth impact. The overall net effect of M&A transactions appears to be positive. Almost all studies report positive returns for the investors in the combined buyer and target firms. This implies that M&A creates economic value presumably by transferring assets to management teams that operate them more efficiently. There are also a variety of structures used in securing control over the assets of a company, which have different tax and regulatory implications. We'll start out with the first, which is the buyer buys the shares and therefore control of the target company being purchased. Ownership control of the company in turn conveys effective control over the assets of the company, but since the company is acquired intact as a growing concern, this form of transaction carries with it all of the liabilities accrued by the business over its past and all of the risks that company faces in its commercial environment. Next, we have the buyer buys the assets of the target company. The cash the target receives from the sell-off is paid back to its shareholders by dividend or through liquidation. This type of transaction leaves the target company as an empty shell if the buyer buys out the entire assets. A buyer often structures the transaction as an asset purchase to cherry-pick the assets that it wants and leave out the assets and liabilities that it does not. This can be particularly important where foreseeable liabilities may include future unquantified damage awards, such as those that could arise from litigation over defective products, employee benefits, terminations, or even environmental damage. A disadvantage of this structure is the tax that many jurisdictions, particularly outside the United States, impose on transfers of the individual assets, whereas stock transactions can frequently be structured as like-kind exchanges or other arrangements that are tax-free or tax-neutral, both to the buyer and to the seller's shareholders. The terms demerger, spin-off, and spin-out are sometimes used to indicate a situation where one company splits into two, generating a second company which may or may not become separately listed on a stock exchange. As per knowledge-based views, firms can generate greater values through the retention of knowledge-based resources which they generate and integrate. Extracting technology benefits during and after the acquisition is an ever-challenging issue because of the organizational differences. Now, based on the content analysis of 7 interviews, authors have concluded 5 following components for their grounded model of acquisition. The first being improper documentation and changing implicit knowledge makes it difficult to share information during an acquisition. Second, for acquired firms, symbolic and cultural independence, which is the base of technology and capabilities, are more important than administrative independence. Third, detailed knowledge exchange and integrations are difficult when the acquired firm is large and high-performing. Fourth, management of executives from the acquired firm is critical in terms of promotions and pay incentive to utilize their talent and value their expertise. And finally, fifth, transfer of technologies and capabilities are our most difficult task to manage because of complications of acquisition implementation. The risk of losing implicit knowledge is always associated with the fast-paced acquisition. So, an increase in acquisitions in the global business environment requires enterprises to evaluate the key stakeholders of acquisition very carefully before implementation. It is imperative for the acquirer to understand this relationship and apply it to its advantage, employee retention. Keeping those employees is possible only when resources are exchanged and managed without affecting their independence. Next, we'll look at the legal structures behind all this. Corporate acquisitions can be characterized for legal purposes as either asset purchases, in which the seller sells business assets to the buyer, or equity purchases, in which the buyer purchases equity interests in a target company from one or more selling shareholders. Asset purchases are common in technology transactions where the buyer is most interested in a particular intellectual property rights but does not want to acquire liabilities and other contractual relationships. An asset purchase structure may also be used when the buyer wishes to buy a particular division or unit of a company which is not a separate legal entity. There are numerous challenges particular to this type of transaction, including isolating the specific assets and liabilities that pertain to the unit, determining whether the unit utilizes services from other units of the selling company, transferring employees, transferring permits and licenses, and ensuring that the seller does not compete with the buyer in the same business area in the future. Structuring the sale of a financially distressed company is uniquely difficult due to the treatment of non-compete covenants, consulting agreements, and business goodwill in such transactions. Now let's look at the types of M&A deals and why it's important to understand all of the different categories. Mergers, asset purchases, and equity purchases are each taxed differently, and the most beneficial structure for tax purposes is highly situation dependent. One hybrid form often employed for tax purposes is a triangular merger where the target company merges with a shell company wholly owned by the buyer, thus becoming a subsidiary of the buyer. In a forward triangular merger, the buyer causes the target company to merge into a subsidiary. A reverse triangular merger is similar, except that the subsidiary merges into the target company. Under the U.S. IRS code, a forward triangular merger is taxed as if the target company sold its asset to the shell company and then liquidated, whereas a reverse triangular merger is taxed as if the target company's shareholders sold their stock in the target company to the buyer. Now we'll look at the documentation for all of this. Well, the documentation of an M&A transaction often begins with a letter of intent. Now, common sense dictates that there's a lot that goes on before that, but that's kind of really where the rubber meets the road. The letter of intent generally does not bind the parties to commit to a transaction, but may bind the parties to a confidentiality and exclusivity obligations so that the transaction can be considered through a due diligence process that will involve a myriad of different people, including lawyers, accountants, tax advisors, and other professionals, as well as internal business people from both sides of this equation. After due diligence is complete, the parties may proceed to draw up a definitive agreement known as a merger statement, a share purchase agreement, or an asset purchase agreement, depending upon the structure of the transaction. Such contracts are usually crafted to focus on five key types of terms. The first of that being conditions, which must be satisfied before there is an obligation to complete the transaction. Conditions typically include matters such as regulatory approvals and the lack of any material adverse change in the target company's business. Next, representation and warranties by the seller with regards to the company, which are claimed to be true at both the time of signing and the time of closing. Sellers often attempt to craft their representation and warranties with knowledge qualifiers dictating the level of knowledge applicable and which seller party's knowledge is relevant. Some agreements provide that if the representation and warranties by the seller prove to be false, the buyer may claim a refund of part of the purchase price, as is common in transactions involving privately held companies, although in most agreements involving public companies, targets, the representations and warranties of the seller do not survive the closing. Representations regarding a target company's net working capital are a common source of post-closing disputes. Next, we have covenants, which govern the conduct of the parties, both before the closing, such as covenants that restrict the operations of the business between signing and closing, and after the closing, such as covenants regarding the future tax income filings and tax liability, or post-closing restrictions agreed to by the buyer and seller parties. Next, we have termination rights, which may be triggered by a breach of the contract, a failure to satisfy certain conditions, or the passage of a certain period of time without consummating the transaction, and fees and damages payable in case of a termination for certain events, also known as breakup fees. Then we have provisions related to obtaining required shareholder approvals under state law and related SEC filings required under federal law, if applicable, and terms related to the mechanics of the legal transactions to be consummated at closing, such as the determination and allocation of the purchase price and post-closing adjustments, such as adjustments after the final determination of working capital at closing, or earnout payments payable to the sellers, repayment of outstanding debt, and the treatment of outstanding shares, options, and other equity interests. A specific indemnification provision is one that provides that an indemnitor will indemnify, defend, and hold harmless the indemnities for loss incurred by the indemnities as a result of the indemnitor's breach of its contractual obligations in the purchase agreement. Post-closing adjustments may still occur to certain provisions of the purchase agreement, including the purchase price. These adjustments are subject to enforceability issues in certain situations. Alternatively, certain transactions use the lockbox approach, where the purchase price is fixed at signing and based on the seller's equity value at a pre-signing date and an interest charge. I know this is a lot of information to cover, but remember, you can go back and listen to this again, and it's part one of two. So hopefully we'll get through all of this next week, and then you'll have a nice reference file to go back to and listen to some of this information again. I get to actually stop at this point in the show and tell you a few things about our firm, Gross Rose & Moore LLC. We have always believed that our client approach sets us apart from our competition. First and foremost, we listen, and then we take that knowledge leveraged by our experience and vast contacts to create the right fit. We then focus on what is important to you, your business, and any shareholders. We also strive to conduct ourselves in a manner that makes certain everyone is treated fairly and equitably. Really, regardless of who you contract with and what they do, you need an M&A advisory firm that not only has the knowledge and experience to get things done, but understands and cares about your business goals. So, if you are looking to buy, sell, consolidate, form a strategic alliance, get a business valuation, or a consultation, call me at 303-941-7865 or email me at wrose@grossrosemoore.com. Bottom line, we only want to fee if we've earned it, whether it's on the buy or the sell side. No deal, no fee. It's that simple. Now let's look at the process of business valuations. The five most common ways to value a business are asset valuation, that's just as it sounds. It's a value of tangible assets if sold. Next is historic earnings valuation. That's a simple valuation based on past earnings. The next is future maintainable earnings valuation. This looks at future earnings pretty much based upon secure contracts and different documents like that. Next, we have relative valuation. That's taking a comparable company and comparable transactions and using that as your base. The next is valuation using discounted cash flows, known as DCF. The approach taken for a DCF valuation is to then remove debt from the valuation by discounting free cash flow to equity at the cost of equity, or equivalently, to apply a modified dividend discount model. This is in contrast to the more typical approach of discounting free cash flow to the firm, where EBITDA less capital expenditures and working capital is discounted at the weighted average cost of capital, which incorporates the cost of debt. For multiple-based valuations, similarly, price to earnings is preferred to EV or EBITDA. Professionals who value businesses generally do not use just one method, but use a combination to provide you with a range of value. And if all those combinations come up with something that's pretty close from beginning to end, a very small margin of difference between them, then you know they've kind of hit the right number for you. Most often, value is expressed in a letter of opinion of value, an LOV, when the business is being valued informally. Former valuation reports generally get more detailed and expensive as the size of the company increases. But this is not always the case, as the nature of the business and the industry it is operating in can influence the complexity of the valuation task. Objectively, evaluating the historical and prospective performance of a business is a challenge faced by many. Generally, parties rely on an independent third party to conduct due diligence studies or business assessments. To yield the most value from a business assessment, objectives should be clearly defined and the right resources should be chosen to conduct the assessment in the available time frame. As synergy plays a large role in the valuation of acquisitions, it is paramount to get the value of synergies right. Synergies are different from the sales price valuation of the firm, as they will accrue to the buyer. Hence, the analysis should be done from the acquiring firm's point of view. Synergy-creating investments are started by the choice of the acquirer, and therefore they are not obligatory, making them essentially real options. To include this real options aspect into analysis of acquisition is one interesting issue that has been studied lately. Next week, our show will begin with, down the same road here, we're going to talk about financing. We'll discuss the motivation behind mergers and acquisitions. A lot of things that are pertinent to you in the course of the process. But for now, we are running out of time today. So I just want to take a moment to once again thank our listeners for checking out what we've had to say and participating in today's program. I actually see that I've received 6 messages during the course of this. So remember, guys, I'll answer you as soon as we get off air. I didn't have a chance to do it while we were on the air. Do me a favor. Join us next week where we'll continue to explore this process and discuss it in length, as well as me answering some of your questions from today. Keep sending in your questions to be addressed on the air. And if I don't get to them during the broadcast, I'll personally email you afterwards. Thanks again for listening to M&A Today and the support you've shown us so far in 2020. Have a great rest of your week, and we'll talk again next Friday at noon Eastern.